ban. Mr. Campbell.
Good morning. My name is Stanley Campbell. I'm here on behalf of James Govan, who is contending that he, along with another young fellow by the name of Marsh, there was an investigatory stop. Mr. Govan's contention is that the officer's actions in seizing him were not justified right from the get-go, right at the inception. And
let me
also
ask you
that
about the choice of word here. You write in your brief that Govan misidentified himself as Marcus Williams. Now, I don't know how you can misidentify. I can misidentify Judge Easterbrook and think he's Judge Mannion.
We all do that.
Right.
Other than that, they're both such handsome fellows and all that. But how did I misidentify myself?
I think Mr. Govan realized he had an outstanding warrant, in fact.
He lied.
He lied. He lied. The correct word.
So that's the better word here. He lied. And because he lied, it prolonged everything here, right?
Well, it was prolonged once the initial police officer suspected that that was perhaps not his true name, because he couldn't find that name within the database of the Bureau of Motor Vehicles. And so he contacted
found the date of birth, and because it's harder to remember. You give the right date of birth to misidentify yourself.
Right.
It's easier to.
Yeah. No question that Mr. Govan made up a name, gave his proper date of birth, hoping that no further action would be taken in regard to it. But his position would be that that still doesn't provide any basis for the seizure of him when the police officers stopped them as they were walking down the sidewalk. And that's based upon both what the officers saw and what they didn't see from a very close distance, 20 to 40 feet away from where Mr. Marsh had went into the liquor store, and with the use of binoculars, such that his argument is that legally this involves more of a hunch than it does probable cause. And because of that, there wasn't a basis for his seizure by the police officers at the very beginning. Unless the court has any questions for me, that is the heart of his argument, and I think we pretty well addressed what our concerns are in our brief.
Thank you, counsel.
Thanks.
Mr. Geller.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. I suppose the first thing that I want to address is the standard of review. You know, we certainly have credibility findings below by the district judge. And one of the things that I think is at the heart of the defendant's, now the appellant's, argument in his brief is this notion that maybe the officer's testimony was not correct with regard to the hand motions that they reasonably interpreted or inferred to be in exchange. So I just first like to start off with that we do have a credibility determination that was made by the district court, and the standard review requires deference to that. With that having been said, the standard in this case is actually not probable cause. I think Mr. Campbell may have misspoke on that. It is reasonable suspicion. And we are talking about an investigative stop here. Officers see, in essence, two individuals who quite reasonably appear to be under the age of 21. Again, going back to the credibility findings of the judge, the district judge actually observed these individuals in the courtroom, actually got to see their appearance and got to see what they look like. The officers are experienced in that manner. They've, at least in the case of Officer Drake, has had occasion to identify individuals of youthful appearance over 1,000 times. So we have these two under 21 appearing individuals who are essentially milling about a liquor store close to midnight. They approach the store together. They essentially make sort of a face-to-face encounter. Their hands go out as if to exchange or to transfer an item. One goes in the store, comes back out. There's another face-to-face meeting. another motion as if an exchange or transfer was made. Then, essentially, they go on their way. In the meantime, as the one individual, Mr. Marsh, who's in the store, Mr. Govan actually sort of takes a position outside of view of the clerk. The store is one of these where you go inside and you're served behind plexiglass, and so the view of the clerk is essentially out the glass through the front door. And Mr. Govan and the officers felt important that Mr. Govan doesn't stand in front of the door, doesn't try to go in the vestibule, anything like that, but essentially takes a position of almost concealment outside of the store, which, again, is important to the officers based on their experience. They obviously think this is a furnishing situation where you have an individual over 21 going in to buy booze for somebody who's under 21. And there also is, of course, you know, the possibility that one of these fellows has a fake ID, or simply the store is not very diligent in carding or in identifying whether or not the person purchasing is over 21. So there's lots of possibilities here, in essence. You could have minor in possession of alcohol. You could have furnishing alcohol to a minor, use of fake ID, and so forth. They are essentially going to find out what's going on here. And as the court, I'm sure, is well aware, reasonable suspicion is obviously implies a certain degree of ambiguity that can be present. That's, you know, obviously the purpose for investigating. There is ambiguity. There is a certain probability, more than a hunch, that there is criminal activity involved here. So the officers approach, and they do precisely what they're supposed to do. They investigate whether or not these two fellows are over 21. And had they both presented ID identifying them as over 21, this would have taken seconds, potentially, you know, only a few minutes to take care of, because then at that point the officer's suspicions would have been dispelled. Well, as you know, the court has already observed, that's not what happened here. And within 5 minutes, Officer Drake finds out that Mr. Govan has a warrant. So prior to the first 5 minutes of this stop, Mr. Govan is essentially lying about who he is. He provides the fake name. The officer tries to run it in the Bureau of Motor Vehicles database. Doesn't come back to anything. That certainly raises red flags. He contacts the city officer. The city officer attempts to find the fake name in that database. It doesn't come up. And then we learn of the warrant. So quite clearly, the reason why this stop is prolonged even 5 minutes is because Mr. Govan is the one who is essentially evading the officer's diligent effort to dispel their suspicions with regard to his age. So Mr. Govan essentially has no one to blame but himself with regard to how long this stop occurred. And then finally, certainly the government believes and asserts that the officers conducted themselves appropriately and well within the bounds of the Fourth Amendment. Nevertheless, even if there is some sort of violation, there is an arrest warrant present here. There's two cases, Green and Johnson, both cited in the government's brief, that essentially stand for the proposition that even if the stop itself is improper, even if there was some issue with regard to reasonable suspicion, the existence of the arrest warrant provides an attenuation and provides an appropriate justification independently for conducting the search incident to arrest that led to the drugs and to the gun that was eventually found.
Search, he had a gun on him, right?
He did. Yeah, he had a gun in his coat. And he also had marijuana and crack cocaine as well. I have nothing else to present. If anyone else has any questions.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Campbell?
Just briefly, there seem to be three components of the officer's observations. The relatively youthful appearance of Govan and Marsh, observing some sort of hand gesture, as they describe it, and third, the fact that Mr. Govan is referred to by the government as him somehow secreting himself outside of the liquor store. Can't do anything about the youthful appearance. They are youthful looking. One's 20, the other's 22. This hand gesture, the point about that is these officers are within 40 feet of where the Govan and Marsh are walking down the sidewalk and Marsh goes into the liquor store. They've got binoculars, and yet they don't see any exchange between the two of them, either before Mr. Marsh goes into the store or after he comes out of the store. And with Mr. Govan staying outside the store, the testimony was that he stayed outside to smoke a cigarette while Mr. Marsh went inside. The description of the store by the officer was that it was a store that you went up three or four steps and into a glass door. There were no windows on the outside. Then you went into the store where there was plexiglass, where the clerk was situated behind and would hand out the liquor, or tobacco, whatever the person was buying. So that the fact that he was outside the store doesn't necessarily mean that he was secreted himself. It sort of be like if I'm standing here and you can't see my legs, it doesn't mean I'm hiding them from you. It's just a fact of the physical layout of where we are at. So I think what the government is left with is nothing more than a fairly youthful appearance and some sort of hand gesture, but yet no exchange of anything between the two. And in our view, that's not enough to get to reasonable suspicion. He's exactly correct. But it's more of a hunch on the officer's part that did pan out for them. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Campbell, and we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment in this case and your assistance to the court as well as to your client. The case is taken under advisement.